Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 240, it is a welcome return of Karis Gill on the podcast. We last spoke on episode 87, way back in 2001. Karis, she is a co-founder of a Social Story Club. She is also now the winner of the Scottish Edge 2021. And got to say, we talked about many of things. We talked about the work she's been doing with entrepreneurs. We talked about how belief is such an important thing to instill that in people as well. And we basically talked about the challenge she set herself, and she's recently turned 26. I remember the days well. But all in all, it was a great conversation. Great to have her back on. I look forward to speaking with her again in the future, and hopefully I'll get her to start her own podcast sometime in the near future as well. So sit back, enjoy the show, and have a great day. Peace and love to you. Yes. Okay. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 240. Yes, we have the welcome return of Karis Gill from Social Story Club. My God, it was how many episodes ago? Way back, 153 episodes ago, she came on the podcast. Let's say she has a little bit of gusto and a little bit bold and slightly cocky as well. She was like, "Hey, buddy. Hey, can I come on your podcast as a guest?" I was like, okay, no worries. And it was a delight to have her on. Now, she has returned. How are you today, m'lady?
Well, thank you so much for inviting me back. I can't believe how many podcast episodes you've made since, I think, September, November, when we last spoke. But I'm well today. I'm really, really excited today. I've had a great couple of weeks with my parents who've come to visit. Mm-hmm. We have a new start at Social Stories Club, and she's fantastic. And I'm just feeling the vibe today. So I'm so excited to chat with you.
Feeling the vibe today. And look, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
I said this to you before we came on the air, and I'm saying it to you now again. I saw your message come up on LinkedIn about your you wanting to get on, how many podcasts you wanted to get onto?
I think I put 5. So I set a goal or challenge for every birthday.
Yes.
So for my 26th, I thought I'll get on 5 podcasts. And I'm now signed up to be on 12, which is crazy. And it's, to me, this just demonstrates the power of LinkedIn, which I've known before and over again. If you post a post like me, "Happy birthday, me. I'd like to be on podcast. Does anybody have a podcast?" Do you know what I mean? There's just so many people out there happy to connect and, tag people in. And very, very quickly, my diary was full. So, thank you so much for having me back on. I'm really excited to be here. And if anyone is struggling with any challenge, post it on LinkedIn. That's a message for me today for all of you. Post it on LinkedIn. I found premises through posting on LinkedIn. So many opportunities. Some of the best mentors I've got, I've said, I've moved into a warehouse now, and I had I had a picture of a piece of paper, and I put, "Will you marry me?" on it. I crossed out "marry" and I put "mentor," and I said, "I've just moved into a warehouse. I know nothing about warehouses. Does anyone have any advice?" And I have some of the highest people running these massive warehouses around the country get on the phone within 24 hours. So wow. I know you asked how I are, and I'm now talking about marriage and warehouses, but it's a good day today.
Hey, look, you know what? Thank you. I'm flattered, but I am taken. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. But I like that. You see, once again, with your realm of positivity, with the realm of that good energy, which I think many people need to have. Like, yeah, putting it out there, because I would simply say not many people would do that or say like, oh, hey, you know what? I need a mentor. Yeah, you know what? I want to go into like other people's podcasts. Like, yeah, people would sit back and go, okay, I want this to happen for myself, but I'm going to sit here and wait. And wait. And wait. And then a whole heap of time goes by. They look at themselves and go, hey, why isn't anything happening for me? Okay, did you take any action, dummy? No, I waited patiently. No, then nothing's going to come to you. Because when you wait and wait and wait, sometimes it comes to you, but rarely it does. But yes, you want more.
I believe there's a lot of luck involved, but I believe you create your own luck. If you want to be lucky enough to get on 12 podcasts, you need to post about it, message people and ask to be on podcasts. And I think a lot of people, even former me, needed just to hear, just start, you know, stop thinking and just start. Like, I needed to hear that when I was about 21 years old, because it took a good 2 years for me to actually really start to work on Social Stories Club and take it really seriously. But yeah, luck, I think luck can be created by getting out there and chatting to people. I've had so many inspiring stories of people overhearing someone's conversation and then getting involved. And that's what their lucky big break was, because the right person overheard a conversation at a pub. So telling people about what you want and what you need, I think you'll find people connect you and people want to help and they get involved. So I'm a big advocate for connecting with people, building relationships and posting online and taking that chance as well. And it is scary putting yourself out there. I mean, because whenever you put yourself out there, especially in this world of cancel culture, you kind of got to put everything you put through a screen of how could this be interpreted. And I think even stuff which lots of people wouldn't think of, we think of like, am I going to look like I'm bragging? Do you know what I mean? Am I going to look like I'm showing off? Are people going to think I'm stupid, that I should already know about a warehouse if I've got a warehouse, and they'll think I'm incompetent? So we tell ourselves these stories in our heads of the worst possible way things could be seen before we post them. And then we don't post and we don't try and we don't talk to people about what we do. And I think you just got to just go for it and not worry about all that and make the best assumption. Everyone's going to love it.
Yeah, no.
Connections are going to come. 12 people are going to want me to be on their podcast.
Well, like, this is the thing. I would say this. I would say a lot more people would have you on your podcast. On their podcast, just saying. But like, this is the thing, like, with regards to, yes, that inner voice, which like often tries to talk us out, often puts that delay, like, yeah, it's trying to protect you from being hurt. And sometimes that inner voice can, how can I say, get dark and twisted and saying some of the most horrid things to you in the same respect. But like, the whole thing is like the sort of realm of growth, the realm of like self-improvement. It never comes from a place of comfort. And if people think it is going to come from a place of comfort, you're fooling yourself. You have to put yourself out there. You have to throw the dice, take that risk. If you don't, well, you'll forever not meet up with your potential, if you get what I mean. And if you really want to get that, you have to go out there, you have to risk it. And sometimes it might seem like you're risking it all, but if you fall down, remember, fall down 7, get up 8. Simple.
Yeah. Well, I have a challenge for you then, because I was reading, I think it was either a book or a podcast, but it was Tim Ferriss, and his recommendation, for those of you who don't know Tim Ferriss, he's an author and he wrote The 4-Hour Workweek. His recommendation for getting used to putting yourself out there in rejection is two things. One, go and lie down in a Starbucks for 30 seconds on the floor and get used to just feeling like a total idiot and not caring. And two, go up to attractive people in the street and ask for their number and get used to being rejected and people saying no. Because if those two things, being made to be an idiot and hearing the words no can really build that. Do you, I mean, what you need as an entrepreneur, because of the resilience and the armor, because you're going to hear, you're going to feel like an idiot a lot if you keep putting yourself out there, and you're going to hear a lot of no's.
Oh, yes. Well, yes. Like, so what is this challenge you want to put to myself?
I would like you to go out and lie down in Starbucks for 30 seconds. And go out and ask for 3 people for their numbers.
Well, like, this is the thing. Look, I more than likely can do the Starbucks thing. Yeah, if I go out there asking for people's numbers, like, yeah, I've now moved to Royal Leamington Spa, which is a smaller town than London. And let's just say, yeah, my lady would not be best pleased, because, yeah, they're like, hey, how you doing? He's like,
Go and ask out 3 men. Would she mind about that?
Yeah, like, you know what? What can I say? Look, I'm a handsome man. And like, yes, I will get myself into more trouble than like, yes.
Okay, fair enough. So Starbucks it is for you then.
Hey, yes. But like, this is the thing. Like, with regards to putting myself out there, I think I put myself out there a little bit.
I'd love to hear. How do you put yourself out there?
Well, like, this is the thing. It's like every day, it's like a case of, yes, either pushing myself through exercise, mental exercises, and like, yeah, talking to like people around the world as much as possible. Sometimes talking to people about subjects and like Matt, like things I have no idea about. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking to a guy called Sam. Like, okay. He does marketing, but not marketing like, oh yeah, I'm going to do a little bit of marketing, but marketing like for, yeah, big companies which deal with the realm of tech and everything like this. It's more data science rather than like marketing as you know it. The amount of information which came out of this chap's mouth, I was like, oh, okay, right. It's terrifying what they can find out about you, what they know about you, how you act, like how they can find people which marry up to what your sort of ideals are, and like, yeah, can bring them together very damn quickly. And he was like telling me, yeah, for £400 he put in to a campaign, for this was for himself, he had a return, a ROI of £74,000.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So you
want to come work for us?
But you're like, oh, right. But this is the thing. There are times where it's like, yeah, conversations I have, I'm like, okay, right. I did this podcast originally to basically learn and grow and keep myself growing, keep myself like, fluid. And yeah, it has, I'm still doing it now, and yeah, well, I'll take it when it goes to next. Who knows You never know, I might be doing a little bit of public speaking like yourself, you know.
Yeah, good for you. Public speaking, I think, is one of those things which is very different to podcasting, because you have an audience to work with, so it's different every time, and you have to tailor it kind of on the spot to who's right in front of you if you don't know who it's going to be beforehand. There's that challenge that's kind of mixed in as well. But yeah, I think public speaking, what would you want to speak about? Would you talk about how you set up your podcast and everything you've learned from everyone on your podcast, or different angle?
Well, maybe self-development, maybe about the podcast. It's one of those things, because I haven't sort of really sort of went, okay, public speaking, sat down and gone, okay, yes, what are the key things I can talk about? Yes, I have podcasting, yes. 240 with yourself at this present time.
Amazing.
Self-development, yeah. But like, the whole thing is, there is a wealth of things I think I could talk about. It's just a case of, what do I tap into? Yeah. How about yourself? Like, yeah, you've done public speaking. You've like, yeah, the co-founder of Social Club, like Story Club, yeah. What is like, what are you now sort of doing to push yourself? Because the podcast is one thing, to a podcast, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
What else? Come on now.
I'm writing a book right now, which is something I'm doing in my own time. That's really kind of pushing myself out there. And it's because I found a list of what 18-year-old Karis wrote that she expected to have completed by 30 years old. I found that when I went back at Christmas to stay with my parents. And 18-year-old Karis was so ambitious. And on it, the only two things I can remember, because it's the two things I've taken for this year, was visit the Galapagos Islands. So I've got that booked in, and write and publish a book. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Well, like, this is the thing. You say, yeah, like 16-year-old Karis was so driven. Like, yeah, remember 15-year-old Karis, like, yeah, basically, like, winning that letter of recommendation for, like, Sandhurst. Yeah, like, going, you know what I mean? So, like, yeah. So apart from going to the Galapagos Islands, what was, like, your sort of ultimate goal by the time you were 30? And how has that changed now that, yeah, 10 years on, you're like, how's that changed?
Yeah, I'd have to go back and read the list, because I wrote at 18. It's for 30, so I've got time. But the theme was definitely entrepreneurship.
Yes.
18-year-old Karis expected 30-year-old Karis to have run multiple very successful businesses. But separately was make an enormous impact on the world and change people's lives. And it wasn't a SMART goal. I didn't put the how or the measure, and that's something that's harder to measure. Hmm. And I married the two up, and I didn't realize at 18 I'd already figured out those were things that I really cared about and wanted to work on. And then I married them up later when I found out that social enterprise was, two things I was really passionate about, and that's when they came together. And so it was really interesting to read my list. And I think she would actually be quite disappointed, because she was so ambitious. This list was 4 pages.
Yes.
Four pages of just bullet points of, write multiple books, star in a movie, all of these things.
Well, like, this is the thing, like, okay, you're currently starting one book at this present time, like, you're 26. So, like, let's put it this way, to write multiple books, come on now, like, you still could, like, go down the realm of writing a book a year up until you're 30. So there is time with that.
I need to get my act together, don't I? I'm going to milk before 30.
You say you need to get your act together. I think you've got your act together quite well. Co-founder of companies, and helping other people start their own enterprises and stuff like this, and running groups to push people forward. Yeah, I think you're doing well. If you want to do more, I'm sure there is. I don't think there'll be much stopping you, because, yes, you seem to be more energized than you were last time we spoke, because I don't know what's going on, because Karis, of when we spoke first, was you're bubbly, you're energetic, but, you seem to have a little bit more of a steely eye of focus, maybe.
Interesting. How observant of you. I haven't actually listened to the other podcasts, because when other people don't like to see themselves on film.
Yes.
I can't hear my own voice. And so, but as part of doing this 12 podcast thing, it was record them and go back and listen. So I can't remember really what we discussed, but I'd be really intrigued to see how I feel about that as well, and if I agree with you or not. I think I'd say I'm at a point now in my life where I'm very focused, and I'm really organized, and things are going really well for me. And in September, it's gearing up to Christmas time. And Christmas is such a big time for Social Stories Club. It's like you're running up a hill, and you don't know how high the hill is, and you don't know what the weather's going to be like on the way, and you don't know if other people are going to be on the hill and if they're going to be nice people. And so I think it was just an enormous challenge that was coming up, and I was scared for sure. And I think I was, every year the hill gets bigger, and now I'm gearing up for the summer, where it's going to be nice. Just a lot of freedom, a lot of time to work on things I'm really interested in. So I think that may be why in September, November time, I may have been like that. Come across like that compared to now.
I see. So, right. So, yes, steely eye focus, not paying attention to podcasts you've recorded before because you don't like that sound of your own voice. But yeah, and the book, do you have an idea of what the book's going to be about at this present time? Or is it a case of you might have a vague idea of a title?
Vague idea of a title, and I know what it's going to be about, but I can't articulate it properly. So until I can, I'm not sharing about what it's going to be about, because that's what I'm struggling with. Do you know what I mean? The pulling it together and figuring out if I had to say it in a line. A bit like, I guess, with you, with your public speaking, you've got so many different things that you want to talk about, but you haven't figured out like your one topic you'd like to focus on yet.
Indeed. So
I'm really keen to know, you've spoken to how many people since we last spoke? 100 people.
153.
Wow, 153.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And what have been like your key takeaways from running this podcast? And who have you really remembered? And what have you implemented in your life? Because I know you're really passionate about personal development.
Well, like, this is the thing with all of the people I've spoken to out there. Like, it's one of those things where there are a lot more braver people out there than you can ever imagine. The challenges they face on a day-to-day basis from either, starting a business like yourself, like basically going traveling around the world, like overcoming like diseases, which you like, oh my God, I don't know if I would have the strength or like the capacity to deal with. It is one of those things that, yes, the human spirit is strong, it's enduring. And like, if you think this is it, the small section of the world you see on a day-to-day basis is the finality, the whole scope of it all, you are kidding. There is a richness out there. And even if we are sounding, we're more divided in this world today, we're not. There is a lot more things in common we share than we sometimes care to dare to say, I would say, you know. But yes,
that's a wonderful outlook.
But like, this is the thing, and like, the whole thing is, since speaking to since our conversation oh so many moons ago, I've got better a little bit. I'm still like improving my sort of craft when it comes to podcasting, because it's a long way to go. God help me, the day I say, yes, I've mastered podcasting, that's the day I need to quit, because yes, my arrogance and ego have run wild, and yes, I need to stop, you know?
I think it's one of those, it's not quantifiable, is it? I get, you can't reach the point where it's like, this, I'm the best I can be. It's ever evolving.
Yeah.
And you can always learn new things, and there's so many different ways to podcast. You could try new styles and ways. So it's an interesting challenge to have, to be the very, very best that you can be.
Well,
I think you can always get better than that.
Well, like, this is the thing, like, this, like, with regards to sort of self-improvement, it's like always a moving target. Okay, look, we sit here talking to each other, and like, you have most probably a good handle of who you are, but I would say you most probably know 30-40% of who you are as a person, as an individual, on a sort of day-to-day basis. And like, as time goes by, you get to know yourself a little bit better. And like, if you ever meet someone who goes, I know myself 100% through and throughout, they have seen some dark stuff, because knowing yourself completely, absolutely, you've definitely gone across the whole gambit, the whole spectrum of it all, through life. And I'm just curious, like, with regards to like when we last spoke to now, like, because what would you say have been some of the key lessons you've learned in that space of time?
Yeah, so much. I mean, we had the whole Christmas season, and with that, it's crazy at Social Stories Club. And I think the key lesson for me was that we already were hiring individuals with barriers to employment to pack our gift boxes, but we expanded this program, and it was something that I was so excited to do, really passionate about, but also a bit scared.
Mm-hmm.
And employing people, do you know what I mean, who have challenges has been one of the most eye-opening and heartwarming experiences for me, where I've kind of really come to acknowledge just how lucky I am and how grateful I am, but also how much hope I have, do you know what I mean, for the future. And it's something I'm really passionate about now, is a lot of the people that I hired, I can see why they would be getting rejections at interviews. Mm-hmm. I mean, traditional interviews, for example, if they couldn't quite engage properly with the conversations, but they can pack a gift box and really contribute to, I mean, a company in so many ways. Like they should be getting these job opportunities. Their barriers, don't actually stop them being a great team member. So this was something that I was really looking forward to, really, nervous about. And I feel I've learned so much from that. I'm now really passionate about spreading that message.
Mm-hmm.
to other businesses, that you can make an enormous impact through your hiring process and through giving people opportunities in your community. And I think a lot of people feel it would be a detriment to their productivity or their company in some way, when it was not at all. And that, I wasn't sure what that was going to look like. And it wasn't at all. And we would hire people who, for example, didn't speak English, or they couldn't hold a conversation. Coherently, they had speech issues. And you could understand how people would think, well, someone's got to be able to speak English in order to be, part of my company. But the key was they could understand English. Mm-hmm. So they had a level of understanding. And it was so eye-opening for me. And I felt sad at times because I was able to see into a world that I hadn't really been exposed to. In my life, I've been really lucky. And I can't describe the effect it had on me. It made me feel like I want to go home every day and just write down just how grateful I am for every single thing I have in my life, because I'm so incredibly lucky. And there's people out there who, are so deserving of opportunities, and businesses can come together, give these opportunities and make such an enormous impact. And that's why I fell in love with social enterprise, the fact that businesses could be making impact and we didn't have to rely on the government who, I think we're all frustrated with the government. We don't have to rely on laws changing. We can make an impact ourselves. We can start businesses. We can, encourage other businesses to change. We can support businesses that are making these changes. I think that was an enormous learning situation for me.
Yeah,
running that program over Christmas.
I hear you. Like, this is the thing. I agree. Like, yes, there's sometimes an element of what does play its part in, like, yes, where we're born in this world, what areas we are educated in, and like, yeah, how we can move forward from there. But like, this is the thing. Like, there's sometimes I have to push back on that, the factor of like, yes, birth, yes, you're like, we're both born in the United Kingdom. When you're talking about golden ticket countries, yes, that is a golden ticket country. Yeah, you don't have to worry about water, sanitation, like energy is not really an issue. You have power, you have like free education, free healthcare, lots of wonderful things. But like, but there comes a point where it's like, yeah, like, as you say, you make your own luck. You like basically push forward, because like, look, you struck me as a determined young lady when we first spoke, when like, yeah, back when you were a mere lass, like of 25, now of 26. Like, yeah, but you've like worked damn hard to get this, get many of the things you've got in this like world, and like to put forward that sort of ethos and bringing other people on there. It just shows that, yeah, you have like faith and belief in yourself that you can put into place a system where other people can come in who might not have English as their first language. They might not be the world's best communicators. And yeah, you know what I mean? The surprise, like, you might be surprised that it worked out, but yeah, good judgment of character. I might not be able to communicate with them, but they like came across, there's something in them which like goes, yeah, they'll work hard, they'll like show up, they won't be that sort of that layabout lout that needs to go, if you get what I mean. You could disagree with me, but I'm saying what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I think when it comes to hiring individuals with barriers to employment, these are individuals. Mm. And everyone is a different, case scenario, and everyone has a different story, different challenges. So I think it's really hard to have a catch-all response, to this situation, because everyone is so different. And when I've spoken to other employers who also hire individuals with barriers to employment, they've all had such varying different challenges when it comes about. And when you were talking, it kind of reminded me a bit about when Molly May said there's only 24, we will have the same 24 hours in a day.
Yes.
And it's, although I think, I believe in myself, I've worked so hard and I've looked, I've got to, fulfill my dreams. I know I haven't come from poverty and those enormous challenges. And I don't feel I'd be where I was today if I had. I don't feel belief and determination, etc. I've been so lucky. In where I am, it really sets you back when you've come from a difficult background. And we're not an equal, outcome society. We're not even an equal opportunity society. And I am really passionate in thinking, I don't have a solution, but I understand the problem. I'm really keen to discuss solutions. And I couldn't sit here and preach what should be done or what the government should be doing. All I know is that businesses can make an enormous impact, and they could do it very easily. By doing what they're doing already, just having different suppliers, and giving more people and different people opportunities, for jobs. I think that's really my focus, is what can I do, to solve some of the challenges that I'm passionate about, and how can I inspire others to do the same? I'm just not interested in politics, really. I used to be. I'm just not. And I find it, everything that people are saying, right now from the government just doesn't resonate. And I think most people from my generation are kind of with me on this one. It just feels so like a white man's chamber of ranting men, who are power hungry and are making decisions for themselves. And it's just, I'm not going to fight that battle. I don't think I will win, but I do think I could make an enormous amount of impact in a different way through a business, through social enterprise, through Social Stories Club. And I think it's the quickest and easiest way that we can make an enormous change to society is through social enterprise. I want everybody to know. I want everybody to know about social enterprises, to have a mission embedded into company, to support companies that are doing good things, and to challenge their employers as to how they can be more inclusive, and how they can support these companies that are doing great things. Have you heard of the Bi-Social Corporate Challenge?
I have not heard of the Bi-Social Challenge.
So it was set by Social Enterprise UK, and some of the largest corporations in the UK have come together and have agreed to spend over £1 billion on social enterprises. So these are companies that they would normally buy gift boxes from any of their normal suppliers. But instead, if they buy their gift boxes for employees and clients from Social Stories Club, they can support a social enterprise. That many social enterprises, because the products inside our gift boxes are from social enterprises, and they could support jobs for individuals with barriers to employment who pack our gift boxes. So all of these corporates are recognizing they have enormous power to make impact through their supply chain, and they've come together and agreed to spend £1 billion on it. And veganism has really taken off. The next one will be social enterprise. Everyone will know what it is. Everyone want to buy from social enterprises. Everyone will expect their employers to embed not just CSR goals, but social impact into their mission and their purpose.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You've lost me slightly when you said vegan.
Sorry.
No, it's one of those things. I know I'll be like, until like I could live for a million years, and like, yeah, I will be the last holdout on the whole vegan side. My apologies, but
yeah. I'm not vegan either.
Yeah, just like
I support it, but I'm not vegan myself.
Yeah, just like thank you. You see, this is why I like you. We're on the same page on certain things. Kale. No, thank you. But like, this is the thing. You talked about making an impact earlier in our conversation. But like this, like right now, with regards to the Social Story Club and its impact from a year ago to now, like, has it grown significantly? Is it looking like the projection is going higher and higher each and every year? Making that sort of impact a little bit more deeper?
Absolutely. Sorry, our car alarm's just gone off in the background, so
you're okay. I cannot hear it, so that means I can hear it. Yeah.
We've doubled our impact from last year. Mm-hmm. And we were really lucky. We won a commercial with STV. We don't use the word commercial in the UK, do we? We won an ad on a TV with STV in Scotland.
Yes.
And we introduced over 1 million people to social enterprise through that ad, where we educated about what we are. Our boxes are the fact there's stories of what social enterprise is. So that was an enormous win for us. And we won it because we champion diversity as a company. Mm-hmm. And so that really gained a lot of traction around Social Stories Club, and people reached out to us who had never heard about social enterprise, and they got really excited. And when I meet someone who has just heard about social enterprise, I know that feeling, because if I was just taken as soon as I knew what it was, I was like, this is what I have to do. This is, yeah. I mean, what I was brought here on earth to do. And so that was an enormous way we could really scale our impact, was being able to reach new audiences, teach people about what social enterprises are, their stories, which is really key. Mm-hmm. to what we're doing, because with stories, we can sit here and we can spout out statistics, and we can even talk about the sustainable development goals, and although we do, because it's language people understand, it's the stories that people connect with. If we tell you that this product here that you're eating and you think is delicious is transforming the lives of girls across the world who are now getting access to education, that story can really help you understand the difference that you can make just with a single purchase. And it can, that's one story can change the world. It can help you paint a new vision for the future, because I see a future where every business is led by a social impact. And I've already mentioned, I think are the fastest way to change some of the world's biggest issues. I don't trust governments. And so by painting this picture of a world where business is all used as a force for good, I think just gives people a lot of hope, and they become united because they also want this world that we're trying to create. Yeah. And so the stories are really key. Kids can understand them. Anyone can understand them. You can have conversations around them. So we share the stories inside our storybook club of all of the other social enterprises, going, hello, they're all here, go and support them. They're making a wonderful, wonderful difference in the world.
Indeed. No, because I agree with you, the power of story and good storytelling is going to definitely be key. It's been key for the last sort of decade or so, but I think it's going to kick into a next new level. I've seen your LinkedIn, and I've seen you like many a sort of Gary V post and stuff like this. But like, one of the people who really sort of stands out to me, who is in this world and like sort of making a sort of difference, Simon Sinek. I don't know if you know him. Yes. I'd start with why. But like, there was a video where he used a story where like he saw a person who's panhandling in America. And when I say panhandling, that's another word for someone who's like banging on the streets in the States. And okay. Basically that person was can I have some money? But it was let me just write something on the sign and go right. And totally paraphrasing here, but it was it was something in the effects of look, I know you see lots of people out here asking for money on a day-to-day basis. But if you have a little bit of time, or like have some, like, yeah, if there's someone like a family member or a person who may have like fallen on hard times, if you can spare a little bit of change at this present time, that'd be much appreciated. If you can't, I wish you a very good day. Short message, put it down. And a weird little thing started to happen. People who would walk past and just like, yes, nope, you're invisible to me. They would glance down and they would get drawn in. They'll read the message and they would dissociate that story, that short story, and go, oh, great. And give money. And they're giving money. This person's like money went up exponentially. And like, yeah, after about half an hour, like the person was like, oh, thank you very much. Up to the left, because they got what they wanted. But the power of the message, the power of the story is the thing what will motivate people to take action, to do the right thing, to do that next level process. It's just a case of, yeah, with regards to social enterprises, like for it not to be a thing which is on trend at this moment in time, to be long lasting, you need to embrace those stories and get those stories out there. Because look, I love what you do as a company, but I've been around a little bit too long to see sort of like trends come and go when it comes to the corporate world. And like, yeah, to have that impact, say like as a Roundtree's had, like back in the day, like when Roundtree's are at the sort of beginning of everything, they built social housing. They really made the difference to, oh God, I can't remember the name, like the city they started out in. And like, yeah, they brought people and they made things better for them. This wasn't a government. This was a company. It's selling sweets, but you know what I mean? That's how they did it. I don't see why you guys can't do the same thing.
Absolutely. And the sharing the story of what Simon Sinek who wrote that in his book?
I saw this on a video he was doing a presentation for. I've listened to his book, and like, yes, the like how they like how you sort of take the slightly different approach with regards to like the reason, or like you starting with why it like you want a product.
He has a wonderful video series of talking about basically how to tell a story. And I've had his book on my shelf for a very long time. I haven't read it yet, but I've seen that video series. And it was just, if anyone out there listening is looking at how to communicate their story, like they've got their story and they don't have to communicate it, I'd send them over that way. I can't remember where I saw it. It may have been on Skillshare.
Yeah.
This video series was.
And so I'm curious, like now you understand the power of a good story and everything like this. You understand the power of getting that message out. But like, this is the thing. Why are you not doing sort of more on that side of things? You are social media active, but you're not active at the same time, if you get what I mean.
Well, I told you I was writing a book.
Hey.
This is something I'm looking to get more involved with and learn more about. And we do a lot of storytelling at Social Stories Club through all of our social media and on LinkedIn as well. Mm-hmm. And I think as a company, you have so many stories. And for us, we've got the stories of the companies that inside our boxes, the stories of how we ended up starting Social Stories Club. Mm-hmm. And the stories, of our vision of the world that we're trying to create, the stories of the impact that we're creating inside our team. There's so many stories, and mm-hmm. we're already sharing these, onto our platforms. And it's a lot of stories. And it's hard to say, like, do we need one story? That we're consistent with? Do we share them all because we're passionate about them all? And at the moment, it's them all. But I'm prepared for someone to come and tell me we shouldn't be doing that. But we've done a lot through our Instagram. I mean, sharing our stories through there. We've shared a lot on our LinkedIn through our Social Stories Club page, which I'm not sure if you follow. I think you follow my page. And on my LinkedIn, I more share like my stories of what I'm doing at Social Stories Club. I mean, I just shared one of the events, ran last weekend. And when I share posts, I always try and make them story based. Mm-hmm. So instead of just saying I did this event last weekend, I'd bring people to the event and talk about how the room felt. So the room was buzzing, and my key takeaway, and with my key takeaway from the event, it was that anybody could start a business. There were people at this event who were retired and they wanted to start a business, people who just come from school and they wanted to start a business. And so it's kind of taking people to that event and they're imagining all these different people. So when I write my posts, it may not be obvious that I'm telling a story, but because I'm not going once upon a time, but I do very, very intentionally tell stories through my posts as it is, by describing the feelings and what I'm seeing as well throughout my posts. And that's what I did with my podcast when I said, hi, I'd love to be on 5 podcasts for the month of April. I explained that it was a birthday challenge, and that was the story. The story was it was a birthday challenge. So there's so much more that we could all be doing. I mean, I just feel like my to-do list is never ending, and I need to be posting more and connecting more and sharing more. It's really one thing I'm really passionate about, is helping other entrepreneurs, especially other female entrepreneurs who are starting out on their journey, because I felt there weren't a lot of role models for me. So that's audiences I'm already connecting with and really trying to communicate to, but I'm not necessarily doing it through my platforms. I'm commenting on other people's posts that I see where they need help.
Yeah, I see. Becoming the pathfinder. You either follow up someone else's path or make your own path. So laying down that path for yourself and so others can follow. That's a good thing. I like that. I like that a lot. But yeah, I have to ask, like, when we last spoke, I don't think you were like Scottish Edge winner 2021. What the heck is that about? Because I don't recall us having this conversation at all.
No, we won that in November last year. Scottish Edge is the largest business funding competition in the UK. And we'd actually applied, I think, 4 times. We got rejected 4 times, and we didn't even make it through to the finals. So I think I wrote my application the last week, and I wasn't actually planning on applying because I thought we're not the right company because they've rejected us so many times and we haven't even got through. And I thought, I'll just do it. So I did it. And I think I shot the video, I think it was about 2 hours before the deadline. I think my hair was wet, and I think it was 11 o'clock at night. And I knew that the quality of that didn't matter. It was the message. And because it was such a last minute decision, I just had to roll with it. And we went on to win one of the top prizes of 65K, which was just incredible. I mean, it wasn't just that. We then had to go and pitch to, you know, judges and practice sessions. And it wasn't just taking a quick video of myself with wet hair. There was a lot more to the process. But for me, that was just amazing, amazing moment in my career and for Social Stories Club, to feel like not only is this something that we really care about, other people are recognizing that this is really important too. And the mission that we're working towards is a vision that other people want to create, and they believe that it is possible. And it's an unlimited goal. Create a world where every single business has a social impact, new businesses start up every day. It's very hard to measure, I think, as well, but it's something that we're so passionate about doing, myself and Ayush, the co-founder. And it was winning Scottish Edge. It just felt like, wow. Wow. I was speechless. Wow.
So would you say this is now sort of help galvanize you forward to like, okay, what's next step? What's the sort of like what's the small step for like Karis, and like, yeah, the bold leap forward. What do you think that might be for you?
I have a few ideas. Mm-hmm. I've already started up another company since we last spoke. And really? it was accidental. Lots of people were asking me to do workshops and to teach, I mean, about social enterprise, to teach about how to start a business. And it's something that just fills my cup. I mean, it gives me the most joy and most excitement to see these young, sometimes much older than me, entrepreneurs, just people who are really, really keen. And for them to come in feeling like they don't know where to start and to leave feeling so inspired and excited, and they've got a plan and a path forward, it just makes me feel so excited. So I accidentally started another business.
I accidentally started a new business. Okay, look. Okay, right. Yeah, writing a book, starting a new business, like getting onto 12 podcasts. Yes, the non-stop, like Karis Gill. I'm liking it. So, no worries. So now with this new business, now, like, is there a sort of common sort of theme that people, when they come and go, yeah, I want to start a new business, that is either a common misconception or like a common ideal goal people have?
I think the misconception is that it's easy. And I was guilty of this as well when I started Social Storage Club. If you read any major newspaper, then you'll see, you know, boy 13 makes $1 million overnight selling 2 NFTs. Do you know what I mean? Or something, girl 19 builds 7-figure company in 4 months, knitting, or whatever. And it just sounds so easy. And it sounds like, oh, I can knit, or I can go and create an NFT and upload it to OpenSea. And the truth is, it's not. I mean, for some people, it's like winning the lottery. For some people, it is really easy if you upload 2 NFTs and they sell for £1 million. But it's so challenging, and it has to be a lifestyle choice that you choose. And I think lots of people go in just not realizing that you are now a marketer, an admin, a salesperson, a HR person. That's who you are now. And I think people not understanding what day-to-day life is as an entrepreneur, it's not brunching every day and taking pretty photos for Instagram. Do you know what I mean? Which is what a lot of the Instagram entrepreneur influencers are posting. That's what they're posting. And then they're posting shaking hands with happy investors in a lovely dinner. Do you know what I mean? And it would have taken probably months and months, maybe years of talking to these investors and negotiating before you got to that photo. But it looks like you've rocked up to a restaurant, met someone, and they're like, here's a load of money for your business, shake my hand. And I think the problem is people, entrepreneurs out there, there's not many who are sharing their honest journeys. And those that are not gaining much traction because it's not very sexy. Mm-hmm. And on TikTok, who wants to hear, I've been up for 24 hours packing orders and I'm knackered. People want to hear, I made £1 million selling one NFT. And it's just a bit unrealistic. And I'd say that's the biggest misconception people have when they come to me and they say they want to start a business, especially if they say, I want to start a business so I don't have to work as much, or I want to start a business so I can pick my own hours. And I 100% believe that you can pick your own hours and that you can, work less. It just hasn't been the reality for me. And I couldn't see how it could have been the reality for me to build Social Stories Club. And it's not the reality for a lot of people. And I don't want anyone to come here and think that it's not possible, because if it is possible, some people are doing it very successfully. But the reality is Social Stories Club decides my hours, And I could be out anywhere and I need to go back and sort something out.
Yeah.
And it's, I think I think that's a really big misconception.
Yeah. No, like, this is the thing. I would say a lot of people miss the point when they go, I want to start a business. They go, okay, right. You want to start a business? Great. Now, do you have your fundamental skills down? You got fundamental skills. Yeah, the boring stuff. The practice. Like, if you're a footballer, like the keepy uppies and doing the shot taking again and again and again. Practicing techniques over and over and over again, thousands of times to get that right. They go, no. Then you might have a problem. If you look closely at the people who are truly successful on businesses on a regular basis, they have had fundamentals drilled into them, like either by themselves or by an outside mentor, or they've watched it from a very young age all the way up to a certain point. For example, if you use the NFT example, the chap Bebo, who sold the most expensive NFT in the world for 164 million dollars. It was something off the scale, bizarre. But Bebo, this guy, for something like 10 years, he did a piece of artwork each and every single day. 10 years. Again and again and again and again. Before NFTs or digital art was a real major thing, he was there, grinding away. Like, the artwork which sold for that is every sort of piece of artwork he's done from that point when he made the sale. But it's like, yeah, people are like, oh yeah, right. But that he did all of the fundamentals behind it to make it happen, to make it be a real thing. And like, they go, oh yeah, but what about Logan Paul? And you go, right, Logan Paul, okay. You like, yes, he sold the NFT for X amount of money, but he has been in like the sort of self-promotion game for a good maybe 10 years. So yeah. Again, all of the fundamentals, day in, day out, having it happen. You know what I mean? The last Molly, what's her face? 24, you only get 24 hours a day.
Molly May.
And people like berated her for it. Yeah, you do get 24 hours a day, but like the whole thing is she's managed to utilize teams of people. So I've got a team of 10 people. Their 24 hours have now become her 24 hours to help push her whatever project forward. And you can go with Oprah Winfrey, like, the list goes on. But there was a whole heap of fundamental work that had to go into that to get to that stage. And I think that's what many people forget about businesses and the many hats you've got to wear when you are starting up that business. It is painful. It is sometimes lonely. And and sometimes it is covered in realms of discrimination, which might not be totally obvious. But you know what I mean? Sit there silently. But I could, it's things what I've observed. And you most probably could tell me a lot better because you have been in the trenches far longer than I have, you know?
Well, I would say the difference between looking at entrepreneurs, I've obsessively spoke to as many entrepreneurs as I can over the last 8 years. And the ones who I'd say their businesses are successful and the ones that haven't, the main key difference is the people who are successful, they genuinely believed it would be. And although it hasn't been every case, there's exceptions, every single one of those that I know that has done really well, they genuinely believed it would. And they were in almost like a deluded way. Do you know what I mean? There wasn't a possibility this would fail. It was going to work and they were going to do everything it can. And there's many who failed along the way and then they went on to start new ones, but they were successful in that new company because they had that mindset. Something would work and they had no doubt. They had that genuine belief. And although there'd be ups and downs on the road, there'd be times where they thought they would give in, they just knew it could work. If they worked hard enough, if they were resourceful enough, if they met the right contacts, if they, you know, they got out there, then they knew it would work. And they had to then go out and action on that. Do you know what I mean? They had to actually go and meet all of those people, make those connections. And for me, now I believe in the young entrepreneurs that I meet, and I don't really have enough time with them. If I have 7 hours and I'm teaching them, do you know what I mean, how to start a business, I can't teach them 7 hours to believe in themselves. That's like an ongoing, longer thing. But I can give them stories of people in similar situations to them with similar levels of skills and resources or less, who went on and were resourceful and who went on to achieve what these entrepreneurs are wanting to achieve. And so that makes them now believe a little bit that they can. And then they may tell themselves a story, oh, but that guy was had this, or that girl had, I mean, this and I didn't. But you, I think that belief, I really, really wish I could instill that somehow. If we could, you know, somehow develop a way to make these people just genuinely believe that if they, I mean, if they reached out to these people, they met the contacts, it would succeed. I think most businesses I've met that have failed, I genuinely believe that it would succeed if they'd been more resourceful. Do you know what I mean? If they'd stuck it out a bit longer. Many people, they realize it's not the right business for them, etc. But for me, it was my mum gave this to me. I was a dyslexic child and I didn't know. So I thought I was stupid. And my teacher called me stupid. She called me stupid in front of the whole class. And I remember it. And I still remember where I was sitting, the way she said it, the way everybody looked. But I got bottom of the class throughout the whole of primary school. I was absolutely in the bottom and I didn't have social skills. The other kids didn't like me. I mean, I didn't really know how to socialize. And I was led to believe by the way the teachers treated me that I had a disability, and all the kids were looking at me and I wasn't right. And my teacher told me I would never go to university. They told my parents I need to go to a special school because if I just couldn't function like a normal child. I wasn't capable of the intellectual abilities. I wouldn't be going to university. I need to go to a school that gives a lot of extra support. And then at 10 years old, I was diagnosed with dyslexia. And my mum's dyslexic, she knew all about it. And I was able to get the help that I needed. But throughout this whole time of experience that, my mum would come home to me every day and she'd say, "You are so intelligent, Karis. And you can do anything you want. And the teachers, they just don't understand." And she told me I was dyslexic from a young age because she could see it. She said, "They don't understand you're dyslexic. It's a gift." And she was just telling me over and over again, like, "You can be the prime minister. You can be, I mean, this amazing CEO." My parents are entrepreneurs, so they fed that. And so I was deluded in believing that I could do anything. And I had a lot of people saying otherwise. I mean, I had a lot of other feedback. But I think if I hadn't had my mom, I wouldn't have had anything or anyone feeding that to me. And I'm so grateful my mom did, because I didn't believe it. But I heard it and I listened to it. And I was trying to, you know, experiment and figure out who was right here, my mom or, do you know what I mean, everybody else in my life.
Yeah.
And that, my mom just telling me, "You can do anything." That's something that if I go on to have a child, I will instill in them, "You can do anything." That belief, because I had that belief, and it was because of my mom and the way she raised me that I had that belief.
Well, you know what? I am very grateful to your mother that she did instill that realm of belief in yourself. Because, like, this is the thing. One of the hardest things for people on an individual basis is having faith and making that bet on themselves. It's like one of those things that you see many a person bet and make, like, have faith in other things, other people, because, you know what I mean? I can't do that. And it might come down to, like, yeah, an arsehole teacher, or, like, yeah, a dickhead who might give you that sort of negative experience, which, hey, like, those moments, those experiences weigh heavy and they cut deep for, like, everyone over the course of decades, years, and, like, you know what I mean? And you, as you said, I can remember where I was sitting. I can remember, like, the look on the teacher's face. That runs true with pretty much everyone who goes through stuff like this. And like, yeah, you don't really have a lot of people like, yeah, you know what? You can do this. Have faith in yourself. Believe in yourself. Like, your limitations only come down to what you limit yourself to. Like, yes, expand your like belief, expand your horizons and go for it. And I don't think enough people hear that. Don't get me wrong, not everyone can make it, because like, if the world was totally like fair, like, yes, the person who works the hardest would benefit all the rewards that is given. But if you don't have any belief in yourself, if you don't have faith in yourself, there is so many things you're going to cut yourself off from. And I think that's what many people fall into. And it's a, some like it's a painful lesson, which I think people don't get until it's sometimes very late in their life. Or when they do get it, it's just too late, you know?
Absolutely. I think a lack of belief is the biggest thing stopping people achieving their goals, whatever those goals may be. And I think I still suffer from imposter syndrome a lot, but I have this belief, and without that, I wouldn't be here, because everything in your lives can tell you a story of one way or another, and you've got to choose which ones that you believe. And then if you become educated in personal development, you start questioning, why do I have that? Where did I learn that? How reliable is that source? And how would I start feeling and acting about if I didn't believe that? And I've actively gone on this journey where I've had to unlearn a lot of thoughts, behaviors, and beliefs, and then relearn new ones. And it's an ongoing process. And I feel the person I was age 18 is completely different to the 26-year-old Karis here in front today. And I think anybody out there listening who is not happy with who they are or where their life is, I think it starts with your beliefs and your mindset. Like, do you believe, oh, everyone in our family doesn't go to university? We're not that type. What stories are you hearing? Oh, do you know what I mean? Someone said that I'm just not a hard worker. So, you know, that's who I am now. And I think trying to map out, what is it you believe? Which ones are holding you back? And how can you replace that with a more empowering belief? And that's something that is ongoing. And I've spoken to a lot of other people who are learning about this, and there's some that they've been stuck on for years. And there's some that I've broken through this year. And my biggest breakthroughs in my life is when I undo a negative belief system and I replace it. And that's some of my biggest achievements. And it's something that people don't talk about. When you hear biggest achievements, you think, oh, 165K at the largest funding competition in the UK. But really, I think the best things that you can do for yourselves is to, believe in yourself and start picking apart every belief you have that doesn't work for you and creating the person who will achieve what it is you want to achieve. Because that person isn't born. You have to make yourself into that person.
I have to ask, what was one of the things, one of the key things you had to unlearn to help move you forward?
One of the biggest things holding me back, and it was to do with like a lack of worthiness, is I had massive financial anxiety that I felt if I spent any money on myself, it was so selfish and so undeserving. So I would never buy myself a hot chocolate. I would never buy myself new clothes. I would never get a haircut. I would give gifts to everyone and never even fulfill some of my most basic needs. If I wanted a chocolate cake, it would be, well, you know, it's beans on toast today. And I couldn't see, because I saw there's so much going on in the world, and other people, deserved so much more. I've unpicked that belief to believe that I'm worthy of nice things too. And one of the biggest breakthroughs for me was I signed up a yearly annual pass to a spa this year. So I go to the spa most nights now, and just making that purchase meant to me, oh my gosh, I'm through that. Do you know what I mean? I can have nice things too. That doesn't make me a bad or selfish or greedy person. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to go broke the next day. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't mean that my world is going to end. So that's been probably one of the biggest things to happen in my life. And I've never told anyone. I've never told anyone.
Wow. I feel privileged. Thank you. Yeah. Well, very much for sharing.
Nobody knows people have these problems that they're working on. There's not that conversation. People aren't going, oh, so what challenges are you working on in your belief system right now that you're trying to change? And I've never asked anyone that question. Maybe we should. Maybe this is the sort of conversations we need to be having with people. But do you know what I mean? It's something that's just never come up in conversation.
Well, like, this is the thing. Well, put it this way, like, for someone who has been in many a superficial conversation where, like, okay, yes, meaningful BS has been, like, discussed on a regular basis. That conversation doesn't kind of enrich your life, but you got to kind of, like, sometimes roll with the punches, because that's the friendship groups you are in. It's the, like, work relationships you're in. But, like, yes, when you have a more real conversations, like, to sort of, like, I want to get to know this person. You tend to unlock things in them, but you also unlock things in yourself, because you ask the question, but you've then got to be like, okay, I've asked this question. What does that mean to me? It's one of those things where if you ask that, like, a real meaningful question, like, yeah, you don't expect it to just go one way. It will come back to you. And it's like a case of, yeah, sometimes you're ready to answer it and sometimes you're not, because especially when it comes down to the sort of raw naked truth sometimes, because when it comes to raw naked truth, sometimes it's not pretty, sometimes it's not nice, and sometimes it's quite scary. So, and you just got to be prepared for that. And if you can sort of, like, oh yeah, look at your, like, have that moment, look at yourself in that sort of raw naked truth, and, like, not shirk away, not sort of blink at that so-called abyss, you will, like, be so much stronger for it. You'll be so much richer for it. It's just what you need to do sometimes, you know?
Absolutely. What would you say is the most revealing question that you can ask that really starts off these conversations that get to the soul and the real meaning?
It's not just one question. It's like, it comes down to this, like what might unlock things for you will not unlock things for others. It's a case of, yeah, and, like, look, when, like, I can ask a question, go, yes, haha, that's really meaningful, 5 minutes into a conversation we're having, like, and you just look at it. But, like, if I ask that question after an hour of a conversation, then you might go, oh, right, bam. But it's not, like, if it was one key thing,
yeah,
you're like, oh, right, okay, this is the question which has the secret code. I haven't found it, and I don't think it exists. And if someone goes, yes, it does exist, I'll be like, ask that question. Let's see how it goes, like, rolling with, like, 100 different people. And I think there'll be a rude awakening. I might be completely wrong, but in my sort of experience, it doesn't exist.
Well, that's your truth, isn't it? Yeah. I haven't found that question yet either, if it exists. But yeah, I find some of the best conversations I can be in, I fall into them accidentally, and it wasn't, you know, intentional. I didn't have a list of questions in front of me. So is that the same with you?
Like, this is the thing with all my podcasts, I never have a list of questions I'm going to ask. Look, I think anyone who goes, yes, I've got 10 questions I need to ask and everything like this, the conversation tends to not be natural. The conversation tends to be, you get into this sort of formulaic, like, pattern, and before you know it, it's like, you've asked me this question, and now, oh, 3 questions later, you're going to ask me this question, and 4 questions later, you're going to ask me this. And it's like, yeah, the person who's asking the questions, they don't get a chance to relax And that just, their tension will lead to tension going to the person they're interviewing, back and forth, and to a point where, yeah, the richness of the conversation, what it truly lies there will never be found, because the person being interviewed is guarded and the person giving the interview is guarded. And like, it's all part of the learning process. And I've, in my research, I've seen people in many different stages in the realm of podcasting, where they might be like, yes, seasoned veteran, and like they've got like things down, like, yeah, they're fantastic on the mic and they build that rapport, like silky smooth conversation rolls off their tongue and you're like, wow. And then I've seen others which is like, yeah, you've got work to do. And like, yeah, like I'm a little bit fearful when it's like, okay, you've done 100 podcasts and you're like this. Maybe it's just that guest, because sometimes you have a guest like that. And if it's like, okay, it's been the last 5-10 guests, you've got lots of work to do, or you need to have a reality check. It's just one of those things. Yeah, can't be said.
Interesting. Well, you are an expert since you've spoken to so many people, so that's really revealing.
This is the thing. I'm a learned man. I'm not an expert yet. I've got such a long journey to go. Even before I can even consider going, oh, I'm an expert at this, I'm an expert at that. It's like, no, I still got a long way to go. And maybe in 1,000 interviews time, maybe in 2,000, 5,000 interviews time, I might be able to go, okay, I'm an expert, maybe. But the whole thing is each time I have a conversation, it is a new experience. Look, when we first spoke, the conversation was one way. Today, the conversation is a little bit more different. One of the things is, I would say today's conversation's most probably gone a little bit deeper than the conversation when we first spoke. Conversation, you're a little bit more comfortable with me because we've spoken before, and a little bit more comfortable with you. Plus, I've had a number of episodes which have gone by. It's just what it was then and what it is now. It's totally different.
Very interesting. Yeah. I would have said you were an expert. I know for you it's 1,000, 2,000. But for me, from an outsider, have you spoken to almost 250 people? For me, expert.
Hey, I've got to say, and I say it again, I've got a long way to go before I get to that sort of moniker. But I say thank you, and I accept the compliment. It is appreciated.
I think when you, from an outsider perspective, do you know what I mean? All I can see is 240 podcasts. I think, even for me, because I run social enterprise, I think there's so much I don't know about business. There's so much more I can learn, even just about one topic, SEO. There's just so much you can learn. And I think you'll get to a stage where, do you know what I mean, you will know a lot and be able to really help a lot of people, and you will never know it all.
Yeah.
No. Never, ever know it all. But you could still, in somebody else's eye, be an expert and be an enormous resource and knowledge of information.
Absolutely. And look, if by some miracle you know it all at that precise moment in time, you're, I know everything about business, I am the one. 2 days later, there will be an innovation there and an innovation there, and the whole world takes a right turn. Oh, how much do you know now? Wow. It's I didn't see that coming. You know what I mean? And it just keeps carrying on, you know? It's a living, breathing thing. And yeah, while it keeps on living and while it keeps on breathing, it will forever change, you know?
Absolutely. I saw this thing, I think it was a newspaper article once, and it was saying the most intelligent people, when they get their score back from, you know, the IQ test, often really shocked because they're so intelligent, they know everything that they don't know, and therefore they don't feel intelligent. They're just so aware of everything, and that's a sign of intelligence.
I like that. I like that, yeah. A lot. Brilliant. Now, Now, time is coming to our end. I have to say, wow, how time flies when you're having fun. Oh, yeah. Now, I have to ask, and this will be my final question. Like, what is the thing you have most recently felt grateful for?
I love that question. Well, my parents are visiting right now, and I'm so grateful for them. And I think when it comes to your parents, you can so easily take them for granted. But my parents are just the most wonderful humans. I mean, I'm so glad that I get to call them my parents and that I get to chat with them. I have a wonderful relationship with them. They care so much about me. And I have the best friends. And one of my best friends, we're going to the Galapagos together. And that was on my list of things I wanted to do before the age of 30. So I'm so grateful for her. I think it's really the people in my life. I feel inspired every day by all the amazing people who are doing amazing things. And I care so much about. So my gratitude list, I make one every day. It's always really long, and because I've got to a point now where I just embody it. If you do it for a year and a half, do you know what I mean? That's when I started. You just start to really, really feel it. Mm. And I just think for me, it's just the people are always at the top. Ayush, who's my co-founder, I'm grateful for him every single day. He is so clever, so dedicated. He loves all the things I hate. He loves I don't understand. He loves finance, he loves operations, he loves admin. Thank God he does, because if I do not like these things. But I'm so grateful for his support. He's always so supportive of me no matter what I choose to do. So I do a talk at the weekend, for the other business I've started. He's just so supportive. So people, I'm just so grateful for all the people in my life.
Ah, awesome. Awesome. Karis, can you tell the lovely people out there how they can find you out on the marvelous worldwide webs?
Absolutely. So for me, I best contact me on LinkedIn. My name is Karis Gill. That's K-A-R-I-S. So Paris with a K and then Gill like a fish, G-I-L-L. And my company is Social Stories Club. So that's socialstoriesclub.com, Social Stories Club on Instagram, Social Stories Club on LinkedIn as well, and on Facebook. So really, if anyone has any questions ever, if I can help you something, I'm always so happy to help. And it's best to reach out to me through LinkedIn. I can probably best help with entrepreneurs or female entrepreneurs who are at the earlier stage of their journey, or anyone who has a social enterprise or any mindset issues people are going with. If I can help you, I will.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I'll put all of this information into the show notes, into the description. So yes, you can find Karis, Paris with a K, with no problems at all. Karis, I've got to say thank you for coming on today. Once again, it's a pleasure, it's an honor, and a delight to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. This got deeper than I thought it would, and it was really interesting. And I've listened to some of your other podcasts as well, and I know each of them are so different from each other. So I thought this would be a really interesting conversation, because there aren't those structured questions of what is your business? What is your mission? What's your biggest challenge? So thank you. Thank you for having me, and for not having a list of structured questions.
What can I say? Keeping you on your toes. Yeah, baby. Yes, I'd like to say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors out there, for staying with us right until the very end. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic. Be all the positive beach can be in the world, and then some. Have a great day, guys. Yes. Peace. And we are